The blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami. Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sava. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam, Saranam, Gacchami. Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sava. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sava. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dear God, the noble truth of suffering. Dear God, Samadaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dear God, Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dear God, Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Kridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths. process of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves its path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct vayana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiampi, satiampi, sabha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face a new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are human and suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end the suffering.
A couple of things before we begin, if that's okay.
Sure.
All right. Well, I guess this is the beginning.
So, a chap
in Sangha is a dog trainer.
Uh-huh.
And he's, I don't know what word to use, but he's interested in our dogs and how they are. Mm-hmm. And how they got to be this way, mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. And he's writing a book on mm-hmm. Zen and being with dogs. Mm-hmm. Isn't that good?
Yeah, very
so
good.
He, we had a conversation. So we had to talk about it, and I suggested that he write what he would like to talk with us about, since he's far away, mm-hmm. and that then, and we would have a little conversation about it,
right.
And then. And then, like that, he could listen to the recording, and he might have more questions going forward. Yeah. So I thought it would be fun for us just to, this morning, kind of look at them,
yeah.
and then maybe on a Thursday evening, we mm-hmm. could... are you comfortable reading them out for the
Absolutely.
Recorder?
Yep.
So or you could read the first section, and then somebody could take the second section and the third section, and that way, we'll have a chance to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And others listening will have a chance also to look at it, at the topic, and uh-huh. they may be listening again on Thursday if they're animal people.
Okay, great. So the working title thus far is In the Presence of Dogs. I think what is being pointed at is In Presence with Dogs, but we'll see what drops in about that. Questions/topics relevant to dogs, dog training, and spirituality. Question 1. What is the day in the life of a dog at the monastery like? Question 2. How is that different if the dog is a puppy? 3. What is the most enriching part about having dogs as fellow monks? 4. Are there things about having dogs as fellow monks that are frustrating/annoying/difficult or otherwise challenging? 5. What do you do if the dog does something inappropriate? Does someone want to read the next few?
6. How is it decided what is appropriate? 7. What is the process for training / teaching / encouraging a dog to do something? Dog trainers tend to think of this as creating and maintaining behavior. Possible areas of content are vast, but include coming when called, sitting, lying down, stay / wait, walk on leash lightly, urinating and defecating in appropriate places, any number of tricks such as shake hands, sit pretty, wave, and fetch.
Number 8, what is the process for training / teaching / encouraging a dog not to do something? Many dog trainers refer to this as extinguishing behavior. Again, the possible areas of content are vast, but include barking / whining, running off, digging, chasing other animals, urinating and defecating in inappropriate places, jumping up on people, pulling on leash, fearfulness toward people, dogs, or things, aggressiveness toward people and or other dogs.
Number 9, the metaphor is often used that training one's attention is like training a puppy. Could you say more about your experience of this? Number 10, what do you notice about projection and being in the presence of dogs? Thank you, and gassho.
That's very good.
Isn't that very good?
Very good.
Can we see ourselves in this, whether we have dogs or not?
Absolutely. And it occurred to me, Sherry, that it's a rich topic, I project, for us, especially because our dogs are very old.
Yes.
Now. And so for me, I don't know if other residents and other people in the Sangha who spend time here are noticing that that's a new workshop with the animals. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that place of every day reminding what the gratitude for their presence.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so interesting too, because with Sadie, she was here as a puppy.
Yes,
a very sick puppy, and then joined us and gained robust good health and has lived her whole life. Now she's an old lady.
Yeah.
Pache came here, of course, terrified of everything.
Yeah.
And now he's just the most gentle of all possible gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thought we would have fun, not only about them, but again, as we see ourselves in this, because, you know, and I got to talk a little bit about Brian, with Brian about this and his looking at people getting dogs. So he's a dog trainer. So people get dogs and then they bring themselves there actually to sort of play out their karma on this dog. And his desire to sort of turn that around to, can we look and see how we are and how much of that we're projecting onto this creature, and how I knew a woman years ago who struggled with weight and had the skinniest dog, and it was just obvious that how she was working out her issues on this poor semi-starved dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that would be fun.
Yeah.
And maybe there's stuff about it this morning that people would want to speak about before whatever else was brought.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing that I want to say, that I'm going to say everywhere I can for as long as I can remember to, and I was telling Penny about this yesterday, I think, brain pickings.
Brain
Pickings is a website.
Okay.
It's a woman in, I think, Brooklyn, and she does this as a work of love. And she doesn't charge for anything, but she does invite donations, and so I hope anybody who goes there and enjoys it will support her in that way. But the reason that I wanted to bring it up with Sangha is that anybody who's struggling with, well, what should I record about? This is a treasure trove. This is, what she does is gather the thinking and the words, the experience of the greatest of people in the area of the continuum that we are most interested in.
Uh-huh.
There are lots of, I'm sure, really brilliant people in the world of conditioned mind, but hers is of a spiritual bent. And just, you can just start through. And it's, there's just, yeah. So recording and listening, people, I project, if they're like me, will have to actually restrain themselves.
Not to just do that. Yes.
So brain picking.
Yes. Okay, great. Right. It reminds me of a tweet came in, I think yesterday afternoon. Record a poem you love and listen to it as you're going to sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's just that reminder of, right, surrounding ourselves with the things that resonate with us.
Yes. Yes, and from all walks of life, from every age, I envy her. There are not very many people I envy, but I do. To find something like that and have that be what you do for a living, to immerse yourself in that world. And it sounds like kind of pretty much every waking moment
that might be a big piece of why she does it, right? As we talk about, we're only sitting here because we want to be sitting here. We want to be surrounded by this. We want to,
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What should we look at? Penny?
Well, that's kind of a good place to segue from for a very different kind of experience that I've had and I've been looking at. On Friday, I've been with a group for 18 years that's been working to try to stop for cutting in this area. So on Friday, I went with some other people to a man who works for the legislature in Sacramento. And there's, you know, you may have noticed there's a lot of fires.
We don't need the news to know that.
So, and under the cover of addressing fire, there's a tremendous push to just cut down every tree possible.
Because then they can't burn.
And so, that's a bit of an overstatement, but basically to sort of gut environmental laws and create all sorts of exemptions to having to do environmental studies and that kind of thing. So we went to the legislature to see if there was a way in which we might be able to insert a different perspective. And actually, it's the last week of the legislative session this week. So all the legislation really has to be finalized by Friday. So we kind of knew we weren't going to be able to, but we wanted to get a sense of are there people we could work with? Is there something we could do next year? Blah, blah, blah.
Planting seeds, as they say.
So we went in there, four of us, and we went into his office. And the first clue was his office was strewn with papers. They were probably 3 inches deep on his desk, just strewn all over the place. And he had a computer going. It was showing what people were saying on the floor of the Senate at the time. And then behind him were stacks of papers. And that's what he was living within. And he really appreciated it. He was very candid. He's worked there for 30 years. He says he's never seen an assault upon the forest like this happening this year. And basically what he, I mean, his bottom line message was, you have to form a strong enough environmental coalition that you can counter what's going on from the business side, the industry side, which we've never been able to do. Anyway, what was interesting about it was, first of all, that it was informative and dispiriting at the same time. And so it was that interesting thing of being grateful to him for his perspective, that he was so candid, and that we got such a clear picture, and that, on the other hand, that the picture is so grim. I remember... And not just a picture of what's happening with forests, but just a picture of legislation.
Right.
And he said this legislation has to be passed by Friday, but isn't even in writing yet, because it's just ideas floating around. And I remember, I taught in high school, and I remember teaching American government, and those little charts that say this is how a bill becomes a law, and there's little pictures and
things.
It's a little graph and chart and everything. And then I went into this. I mean, just the chaos of it was. Anyway, that was informative in a kind of an ugly way. And so when I came home, I was just looking at, so So what? Right. So what do we do with this? Mm-hmm. Because I know you also don't read the news, but it sort of exemplifies, this does sort of exemplify what the entire political situation looks like right now in the world, in the country. And as I was driving home, I thought, I want to somehow stay with this. Yeah. And I, in the midst of this, I'm going to be a happy person.
Wow.
And it was just, and I also was thinking that years ago, when I had a very, very, very difficult year, at the beginning of that very, very difficult year, I came and had a guidance appointment with you. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking home from that and saying to myself, in the midst of the internal chaos that was going on in me, what matters is kindness and community.
Yeah.
It's bottom line.
Yeah.
And that's how, when I was coming home, that's what came up was, what matters is kindness and community.
Yeah.
So the challenge is to stay engaged, not just go run hide, in something that is overwhelmingly awful, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to stay kind,
yeah.
to nurture community, and to stay happy.
Yeah.
Wow. And knowing that, I can be happy.
Yes.
So interesting.
And, you know, it's like that metaphor of there he is, with all surrounded by the papers, the computer, the stacks of things, and that's what we're up against, right? For ourselves.
Yep.
There's conditioned mind, completely
yep.
overwhelming.
Yep.
Not only is this picture grim, but this is just one tiny issue in one tiny state in one tiny, right? Oh my God, and then what's the...
Yep.
So that's just so amazing, that wisdom of, okay, let me just stop,
mm-hmm.
just get here, and there are the priorities.
Right.
Kindness and community. That I can do.
Yep.
I can be present to this, you know, with all that comes up with that, and just focus my attention, kindness and community.
Mm-hmm.
Just be here and be happy.
Yep. And I was grateful that I do not work in that situation. Yeah. I can see how it would drive you crazy.
Yeah.
I would find it soul-killing to work in that. And I'm grateful for him for doing it,
mm-hmm.
for sort of being a bastion in the middle
yep.
of all that.
Yep.
And so I wrote out my little notes for the rest of the group, and we sort of said, where do we go from here? And then I wrote a handwritten thank you note. And I love doing that. I love writing handwritten. And I thought, this is as important as anything I can do.
So yeah,
right, this man, especially,
absolutely.
In the midst of that,
yeah.
a handwritten thank you note.
Yeah.
And that's what I can do. I can do both kinds of things.
Yeah.
I can stay engaged, and I can have a thank you note.
You know, I don't remember exactly where it was, Penny, but I saw something recently where it was sort of a motivational speaker kind of thing, and they were talking about how, okay, so I'm the manager of a sales force, and, you know, someone comes into my office, and I say, what's going on? You haven't made your targets in the last 3 months. Like, what's the deal? Like, we're not going to be able to hang on to you, right? What's going to be the impact of that? Or what if, as the manager, you walked in, and I said, gosh, is there something going on? How can I help?
Yeah.
Right? That's a completely different relationship with it. And so I just, as you said that, I got goosebumps of maybe the most important thing is that thank you letter that you're going to hand write to that fellow who's in the middle of that, all that.
Or at least it's an important thing.
Yeah.
It's important for him, and it's an important thing for me, too.
Yeah.
And that's one other thing I was going to say. And the other thing about that being happy is not being happy contributes nothing. There's nothing that would contribute to make anything better.
It doesn't,
in my view,
it's
miserable.
It does contribute, just not on the side we might want it to contribute.
Yeah, nothing that would make anything any better for anyone, including this being.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, it was just an interesting, it was an interesting drive home because that's what arose.
And how lucky we are to have the information that what really matters is the process,
mm-hmm.
not the content, because that's what you're describing,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that you have the ability to see the process that's happening and then to choose the one that you want. And then to have that be the gift, we could say, that you're offering
mm-hmm.
through being that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so it's sort of like, you know, in the midst of all the websites, there's this website, you know, there's this.
Yes, that's what I was thinking
too,
is that that's the other... You know, when Sherry was describing it, that pulling things from all over the place. And what a good reminder that there are things like that to pull from all over the place. Because it could seem like, gosh, all we're seeing is cutting down trees and, you know, taking kids away from their moms. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca.
Gosh, I hear things like that and I just go to a place of such immense gratitude for people like All of that.
Exactly. All of it.
All of it.
Yeah. The person sitting in the office, the person willing to make that drive.
The person who's willing to write a thank you note, who really gets that that's the best thing I can do, you know, and who really can hold the whole picture.
Yeah.
The whole picture. Doesn't need to turn away from all the forest issues. He doesn't need to, but who can hold the big picture.
Yeah.
And I just, oh, thank God. Because we, thank God. I find that something that was just said triggered exactly what I'm looking at, I think, which is that I can go to that place of suffering when it's so horrible, and the answer he was giving, it sounds like, was, organize people, build a coalition so that we can do something. And then I can go to that place on the other end of the spectrum where it's so wonderful. Organize people. I want to tell everybody about this. I want to, and it feels like very much the same process. I'm not sure it's exactly the same process, but it feels so much like we got to bring people in. We got to or share and get the news out. Either one, that movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So either one, it might be bring people in or get the word out, but it feels like the same process.
Yeah.
Some kind of inclusion or participation, or I don't know.
Almost even an evangelization.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Uh-huh.
That's the word that's sort of dropping in, and then. So tying it to this particular issue I'm looking at, so I recently had some conversations with some people in my family about a project that I wanted to bring them into, mm-hmm. you know, and have for some time, and it hasn't really been essentially in various ways the answer has been no.
Mm-hmm.
No. And just watching. So when I've been looking at it the last couple of weeks and trying to take that largest perspective I could possibly take,
uh-huh.
where I wish I could get was okay.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't seem to be all that. I can't really stay in that place very mm-hmm. much.
It is accessible to you, we're guessing, since you can project it.
Mm-hmm.
You can
visit there. Sometimes.
And you can visit there.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't really been available to stay there. To stay in that, the place that you'd like to be in is okay.
Yeah. Well, I started to add, moving on.
Uh-huh.
Moving on. Because they're not here yet.
And moving on in the sense of, because it's a process, because I'm enthusiastic about this thing, and so the fact that this person isn't interested is okay, because that doesn't impact my enthusiasm in any way.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, where I often find myself going is wait just a minute here. Mm-hmm. Kind of a can't take no for an answer here.
Uh-huh.
This isn't okay.
Uh-huh. Can't take no for an answer here because
you owe me.
Mm-hmm.
We have this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There's a no perspective here that I need to turn to a yes.
If you could see what I see, then the answer would be yes, that kind of thing.
Well, that kind of thing, yes, there's that. And even not even that much, but it's like, I want you to see the no that you're living in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even care if you're so excited about this that I am,
mm-hmm.
but I just really want you to see this no that you're living in,
mm-hmm.
and how that is limiting your life.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So a sense of wanting you, whoever this person is, to be able to see the no that you're living in, that is your life.
It matters. That seems to matter so much. It would be like, I need to go to those legislators who were gutting the forest and say, you've got to see this.
Uh-huh.
You're killing our collective world, and
uh-huh.
you're killing your own life. And you're like,
But what stake do I have in that? I mean, it was like everybody's working out their own salvation diligently. I don't have a horse in that race, so to speak, you know? But yet with these other people, in my family, I feel like we've got a different relationship here, and I do.
I have a horse
in the race. You are my horse. Yeah.
I'm guessing you've reported about it.
And it kind of gets back to that largest perspective possible of it gets back to what Jesus said, who is my family?
Why them? It's so true.
I hate that.
Well, what keeps dropping in, Rebecca, is I wonder, you know, but I imagine you're reporting about it, is if you've gotten to do either literally or kind of the spirit of it, of the toucan reporting, where the person who has this, who really feels this way, gets to completely feel that way, gets to completely express that that's what goes on for her. And yeah, she knows intellectually, gosh, why would it be different to have a horse in this race and not have a horse in this race? But she gets to actually have the experience of it.
Wow. Yeah, no, I haven't done it from that perspective. It's always been more of the, I've got to get to that higher spiritual good place. Mm-hmm.
And what's so interesting about that is it's almost like, if I'm tracking what you're saying, it's like Rebecca's in the same place that's happening in that process. Like, you know, you need to get to this place. You need to get to this place where it's just okay.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Huh, I had not seen that.
Instead of just getting to be where she is right now.
Wow, that seems so obvious now that you say that. It always comes back to that, isn't it?
Which, you know, as we often hear in practice, thank God.
Yeah.
Because if it were complex, like all those piles of papers, we'd have to look through all of them.
Wow, thank God for facilitation, because there it was. I mean, I've been using the tools, and I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. Boy, that's a helpful reminder. Mm-hmm. I've been looking at that, too. Just that place of, we just finished our retreat. You know, we talk to people about, you know, when you're transitioning from retreat, here are the things to watch for, and then remembering, oh yeah, here are the things to watch for, right? And then realizing it really takes all of the tools. Yeah. And what I've been looking at with it is, not to expect, how to say it, not to use the tools so that it will work, but just to keep using the tools.
Yeah.
And which I predict is what you did, which is that you've been looking at it, you've been recording about it, and then the next tool is you bring it to group.
Wow. Yeah, thank you so much. That's so helpful.
Judy.
I'd like to look at some beliefs and assumptions that are pretty muddled at the moment.
Okay.
And it has to do with friendliness and social graces and privileged environments and like that.
Okay.
So, what I notice is that conditioning has a reaction after every interaction. You know, that person was mean or that person was harsh or something. And then when
they're not helpful, we've got to just decide how does this go, who is what, and
how does the standards get established anyway, and what's nice and what's harsh? I mean, that's why it's just all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, especially when the retreatants are here, but now that I've been here longer, there's this urge, like, you know, like somebody says something in group about their back, and I want to know, how's your back? You know, I just...
or the people who would be fine if I just made that show just quietly.
Right. And we were learning the kitchen.
It's relaxing, isn't it, to know you're not going to do that?
Well, I just
know a very helpful thing about that.
I really worry about that. You know, you're really going to do. No, you're not going to do that. I know.
It's like, I assume for breakfast, I know.
Yeah. And then I read all this research about, especially when you're aging, it's important to have lots of friends and social interaction. So you just look back and forth all the time. But I practiced extensively at another Zen center that had noble silence, and it wasn't. And I saw what the gossip did. I mean, it was just destructive, personally and in an institution, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of off. But I just want a monk to smile at me, you know, or I just want to smile. You know, I'm like, I don't know what that means. That's what I mean about algae being jumbled. It has some great meaning that I'm okay, or we're together. Or, and yet I know that the silence is a... I know it's a slippery slope if one thing starts. Mm-hmm. I've heard that. I believe I've seen that. And I know it's a more intimate heart connection when I can just be with somebody mm-hmm. in their presence mm-hmm. and not say anything. Mm-hmm. And yet there's this, how's your back? How's your back?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
This is how I'm doing.
Yeah. So I promise all of this progression, because clearly it's up for me, but I have the exact same question as we were looking at with Rebecca. Have you done the two-handed recording with us?
Not that way. Uh-huh. Not that way.
Yeah.
I've done lots of recording about what I said.
Yeah. Just because that same sense of, you know, so that, gosh, I just so want to walk up to this person and say, how's your back? Or I want someone to smile at me. Or, you know, those places of...
Or the retreatants. I wanted them to know how courageous I think they are to be here.
I know.
You know, I just wanted that.
Amazing.
Oh, man. You know, I just wanted that.
It was
horrible not to be able to do that.
Well, yes. Horrible not to be able to do that. And amazing to have that tremendous amount of the word that I would put in there, I don't know what you would use, is love. Coming through.
Yeah. And I really didn't want to interrupt anything that was going on through that.
Yes.
I really, that was even bigger than the, that's why
which is more love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We talk about that in the orientation on the very first day. We don't use the word love because it might be a little jarring on the first day when you've just gotten to the monastery to say, you know, it's really an act of love to not talk to each other. Right? but it is, right? Because everything in you wants to just walk up to every person and go, oh my gosh. And, you know, being in the kitchen, you don't even know what they're saying.
I know.
Just that they're here and they're doing this. You can know the courage. Yeah. You can know the love, all of those things. Yeah. And so you want to so much. And then the even larger place of love of, and I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. Because I want them to have their own experience. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to own all of those projections and all of those things that you want so much for everyone. And it's not that you don't want it for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's just that, can Judy have it? So instead of being left in a place where I'm in this constant conversation with conditioned mind, but what is that? And I'm not sure if the and sort of where I get left is, oh, it's so awful that I can't. Mm-hmm. Instead of being left with that, could I be left with all of that? Again, I don't know what word you would put to it, but that's coming through mm-hmm. of seeing that everywhere around you. Mm-hmm. Getting to experience that process.
I can get back here. Mm-hmm. When I'm at home, it's more about the research that you need to have lots of friends, you know, on aging and all that social mm-hmm. community. But there aren't a lot of people that I love from afar, but not real close, you know. I was thinking about this the other day. I was recording, but there's not a lot of people that I could tell that I expect outhouses here.
And loved it, exactly.
I mean, yeah. You know, they just roll their eyes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was a big shot in my professional career, and people can't believe that. I mean, it's,
right, you're doing that.
Right. So I don't even mention it. You know, I don't want to hide out. That doesn't feel good either.
Yeah.
So fortunately, I have a husband who understands all that. But other than that, so you should have a lot of friends. Oh, and I don't have anything to say to these people. Oh, but they like, you know.
Yeah.
And it just leaves me.
Yeah, that's such a good description. So what you're left with is a conversation.
Yeah.
Instead of an experience of life.
Right.
Maybe starting with the two-handed recording, with first just the person who has that experience walking around. Gosh, I so want to just, you know, whatever it is.
Smile.
I want to, which you can do technically. And just to be clear, there's no guideline against smiling.
But you can have eye contact, so you don't know if they're smiling back.
But you're free to project it.
That would help.
It's so good, isn't it? Yeah. So just letting that person talk, because I project you're going to see a lot. You know, we assume we know I assume I know what's going on with this person, and you know, I put those pieces together, and but sometimes it's really different to just let her talk about it, just uncensored, just let her talk about it. And when I listen back, I always hear things. I mean, one of the biggest things I always hear is her sincerity. Mm-hmm. And where she's coming from. You know, and she might be, quote, confused about things, or she might be, you know, she might really feel like, no, but it's really the hum, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But that left hand, in my experience, can listen back through that and can hear what's actually going on for her. Mm-hmm. And then we have a shot at meeting what the actual need is. Uh-huh. And then even being able to take that home, and I would project beginning to have a process of connecting with the experience. And then being open to what are the ways that life might, that experience might be available to me. Does it need to be a whole bunch of social friendships? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe there are other things, other places I start to see that need to connect might get met, you know, in the clerk at the grocery store with the, whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of assumptions about what friendship is and how that looks. So it's coming back to what's true for me then.
Exactly.
Rather than what the social science psychologists are saying.
Exactly. And even, you know, I think it's what's so amazing about awareness practice, that place of, you know, even that place of not believing what I think practice is, or what, you know, sort of an intellectual idea, but having my own experience of what's actually so. And from that place, being able to practice it. Because what we always get to is, gosh, what I actually want is presence and acceptance and unconditional love and to be here. And to, you know, it's like Penny was saying, it always comes back to a process, and that we can practice.
This is a great conversation, and I was looking at the training we were just talking about with dogs and seeing, oh, that's in this way. I deeply vow to train myself. And I feel like maybe getting in touch with that a little bit more. I'm reading about Gandhi, and it seemed like that's kind of where he got at some point, is the transformation in the world happens with the transformation here. And that we all have the tools and the capacity, you know, built in to do that. You know, we had the training early on, essentially, to leave ourselves. And as far as I can tell, then be raised and parented by self-hate and egocentric karmic conditioning. But that didn't change. Yeah, that the goodness is always what we've been. And so really it is, we're unlearning that and retraining to be with what is actually so.
Yeah.
I love that we could project the smile.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what a completely tremendous life I imagine one would have if you always projected a smile.
Yeah. Well, and to connect it up with what I think you were just saying, which is that as we're unlearning, you know, the what we were conditioned with, we're not finding out something new.
Yeah.
We're going to what's so,
basically. Yeah.
So we're uncovering something that's there. And so there's a way in which it's very accurate to always project the smile.
Exactly.
Because the smile is always there.
Yeah.
It might be covered over by something. You know, exactly. I was just having the images Judy was talking. So, you know, I'm going along the path and I'm smiling. As someone else is walking by me, I'm projecting the smile back. And the only way that smile isn't actually coming back is if someone's going through something, some conditioned conversation. And that's fine too, because underneath that, and here, what we can know is if that's happening, that person is practicing to uncover that smile. And sooner or later, that's what will reemerge. So it's accurate, always, to project that.
That's exactly where I was going. And that's what I see in the work that Gandhi was doing, that he could always see the smile in the quote enemies, in those who are being violent, those who are hating, those who are oppressing.
Yeah.
It's so clear that there was no difference between him and someone else.
Gosh, that's the ultimate mentoring perspective, isn't it? In the same way that left hand can see through what might be going on with the right hand to see what's actually happening, you're projecting that Gandhi had that for everyone, could see through whatever was going on mm-hmm. to that love, to that smile.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which seems a requirement if you want to have an impact on the world. Because as long as you stay...
With that kind of impact.
With that kind of impact. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and so then it seems like in order to project a smile, then you would have to be in the process of smiling.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the training.
Yeah.
And I love that, what you were saying about, I don't have to learn how to smile or create a smile. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's the Rumi... not to seek for love, but to seek for everything that gets in the way, mm-hmm. those barriers. Mm-hmm. And they just, in that process, you don't even have to move the barriers.
Yeah.
They, at least my experience is, in that seeking, they dissolve.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, easy to project on Gandhi's work, how much just being around him, being in that presence. And we have that experience in our own Sangha, being around folks who are here and present. Yeah. And how just being in that energy almost yeah. can dissolve that which gets in the way of the smile.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that dissolves what gets in the way of the smile. We don't actually have to remove the barriers.
Right.
It's not another doing that I have
exactly.
to now take on.
Yeah. Which but is good for me to hear, because that's where I go.
Yeah.
That efforting, that doing is so core to the karma, mm-hmm. and so it's not a surprise that's what I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like I'm saying to myself,
yeah,
Scott, you don't even have to remove the barriers.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is I can say that because I've had that experience.
Exactly.
And so back to the training piece, I've been doing almost every morning something that we've been doing in practice for a long time, which is being aware of what the voices are saying. And so in the recording, it's like the voices lie and say this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying something that they actually say to me.
Uh-huh.
And then I write what is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be something like the voices lie and say, we never show up. And then you would write what is true, and I do show up, and here's all the actual times I do show up.
Yeah.
So it, you know, feels very real to the person who's making it.
Yeah, it's not an abstract.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Which is really helpful. And so, and it's been great to actually pay attention to what's being said to me. Because even though it seems like I'm doing that, and I've done that before, something about writing it down and actually addressing it, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And the beautiful thing that's been surprising me, so like this morning I wrote down essentially how it is always talking about what I think of, if I have a quote, mean thought or a hateful thought about someone else,
mm-hmm.
or I have a thought about not, like, I want to get out, I want to leave here, mm-hmm. leave living here.
Mm-hmm.
That's me thinking those thoughts.
Okay.
And how could you? How are you not grateful? How could you think that? You know, it gets me a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in general, the thing I think that's the most challenging in practice is
mm-hmm.
being clear about what you are and what you're not.
Yeah.
And the conditioning, obviously, has been so heavy, and I constantly think that's me.
Yeah.
And so the responses to these have been essentially love letters from the mentor, from the compassion. And they're really wise. And it's like, I think I'm just going to write down one or a couple things, you know, that they're actually true,
right.
And it just keeps going. And it's one of those places that I love. I'm not always in, but just, whoa, ooh, I'm writing, and like, oh, that's good. And it just keeps coming. And in the way that it's written, it's so spoken to me. I mean, there are examples, and there's just this graceful, lovely writing that just, I can feel those lies actually being dissolved in the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such an amazing process, isn't it? Because from what you described, so you were talking about how helpful it is to write down the messages that are said to this particular person,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's a way in which it feels like kind of what's supposed to happen is I'm vaguely aware that those messages are happening.
Yeah, the voices are mean. We're not supposed to listen to them, right?
They're definitely having an impact. And then I'm bounced off basically into some kind of coping. Something to distract from the pain of that. Okay, good. Now I've, quote, redirected my attention, right?
Yeah, that's what happens.
What you're talking about is that when you turn right to them, not to kind of explore them and get into them and understand it, or why is this happening, or, okay, now let's see, if I'm this way, then I need to start not being this way, and I need to, right?
That's the other conditioning we get.
Right, yeah. Not to get on a self-improvement program, yeah. But simply to just stop and look at, okay, what's actually so? Mm-hmm. And then as you do that, there are just all these things. Mm-hmm. And I love that description of it. It just keeps coming. I didn't think it up. Mm-hmm. It just keeps coming. There are all these things that are mm-hmm. actually so. And that helps you with that fundamental place you were talking about, that confusion of, I think that's me thinking those thoughts. Therefore, I'm very vulnerable to that self-hate of, gosh, how could you?
Yeah.
But in that exercise, we begin to see, well, that's not me at all.
Yeah, it's so obvious, not only what is being said, but in the process of being in that mentor position who's writing, that is what I am.
Yeah.
You can feel it, just everything, all the way to the ends of the skin on your body. Mm-hmm. And where the other thing, when I'm writing the hateful things, it's very tight and small, a little pinpoint. And I love the two components, which is acknowledging what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. This is being said. Mm-hmm. And look, let's look right at it. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, that's happening. And then it seems like there's kind of that acceptance place. Not that I agree or that I want it, but that is happening.
Yes.
And then here's the response, here's the movement to that much larger perspective of unconditional love. And then, of course, you record it, so you're training yourself.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of things you're hearing. These are lies. This is, you know, it lies and says this. It's not true. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you're training yourself for just so. And it's not like I'm memorizing it. I'm practicing the movement from what I'm not to what I am simply by listening.
Yeah. And it sounds like from what you're describing that in that process, the fundamental movement is from there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking this, I shouldn't be thinking, why are you thinking this? To, oh, okay, this is what's going on, nothing wrong. That's the essential movement that's being made there, from something wrong to nothing wrong. And from that nothing wrong, that's kind of the process of the smile being revealed.
Uh-huh.
From nothing wrong, all of that other stuff can be what it, it's like it returns to its authentic nature in when it's the nothing wrong is what's allowed to be there.
It's interesting. I was just saying that if I'm training in what's not true, and these are some of the things that it says, when I hear that here or when I hear it in someone else, mm-hmm. I'm training to, oh, there's that, and then to keep looking.
Yeah.
Not go off into avoidance or coping or running away or controlling, but to keep, to stay there, and then it seems like anything, dissolves under scrutiny.
Exactly.
Then what is revealed is that love letter that comes out when my attention stays here.
So if everything that comes up is potentially that, so okay, I know there's nothing wrong. So how did that look here? And that's what transformed it. Then from there we see, oh, well, of course, what's actually so is all of this.
When we were having the conversation about feeling pulled to do something that's outside the privileged environment because there's that urge to communicate something that you're feeling deeply mm-hmm. or experiencing deeply, mm-hmm. I had an opportunity to really experience that myself recently in something that happened. I missed a commitment with a practice commitment. Mm. And I don't do that. Do you know what I mean? I usually make that shot. Yeah. And I have all kinds of things, all kinds of support for that, you know. Alerts and calendar mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. And not only do I make it on time, you know, because it's important.
Yes.
It feels really important because mm-hmm. I know if I'm sitting there and I'm waiting for a call from somebody mm-hmm. and I've been looking at something and I'm looking forward just to processing it or something like that, mm-hmm. It's very disappointing if the phone isn't ringing, you know, it's like, and my conditioning, and this is what was coming up, you know, of course, when I didn't make it, the conditioning is, oh, it must not have been as important to them as it is to me, kind of thing, you know. And I could just feel that I needed to say what happened to me, you know. I needed to apologize, and somehow, in all of that, I would, this person would know that I really cared. It wasn't just, so that became
the thing that was important. Those things became what was important. I need to explain.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to apologize so that this person will be able to see that I do care.
And the really nice thing about it was that I could see that that was all my conditioning.
Yes.
And that, for me, my work was not to do that.
Yeah, wow. Mm-hmm.
Not to do it. And, oh my goodness, it was really challenging.
Restraint religious observance.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, just to make the communication about...
Yeah.
Missed it. Let's reschedule it.
And, Boy, that's big.
It was. I mean, it was just amazing how intense.
Yes.
It was really a good example to see. I mean, a good experience to see how strong that karma is.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make everything okay with the other person. And not be the one who's hurt somebody or disappointed somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if this is a piece of what you're saying with it, but it can go to that place of, wow, there truly are no mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like life had to get through a lot of alarms and reminders to set up that workout, right? A lot of things had to line up in order for you to forget, right? And so then you forget, and you get to have this whole other workshop that you never get to have if I'm always able to get there when I need to get there, right on time, because there's a, even though, yes, that's because it's important and I want to, and all these things are set up to, you know, assist the human and all those places, there's a way in which it sounds like what you saw with is conditional.
It's very conditional, yeah. It's about, that's what's required for me to...
Yeah.
To do that kind of work, you know, I have to do it very responsibly and all.
Yeah.
I get to be a human,
right? And
not I is the human, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a machine on the other end. It's a you know,
well,
all these changes happened in my life. Everything was cuckoo, and I just lost track of it.
Given that it's all practice, ultimately, I would project, we don't want to be coming from that conditional place. And
absolutely.
So it's kind of like to mirror those things, again, that don't get mirrored when all those other conditions are met.
Right.
And, you know, that trusting in the adequacy of very likely it was whatever workshop it was for that person and, you know, all of those.
And I happen to know that person has some of that karma about, you know, kind of happens that way.
It's okay.
And so then I'm predicting she would have a nice workshop on that too. So everything always is perfect.
It really is.
It always is. And that's just, to me, it's the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
How life is. And how could it be otherwise? Because...
Right.
We are in, you know, the only thing that would think it would be otherwise is that karmic thing of having the ability to be separate from life.
Right.
You know, because then it's going to be this way.
Right.
But no, life is going to be exactly what it is.
Yes.
And what it is that,
yeah.
You know.
Life is all of this.
It's just everything that's happening in that very moment all the time. So it's no wonder that it's always miraculously appropriate. It can't be otherwise.
Yeah. It's so good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Colin. Yeah, there's... I'm getting to a point now with the... tasks than that. There's some of them I'm sort of able to do them now without sort of tripping up every sort of 5 minutes.
I missed one word with the.
Well, with the tasks and in the kitchen, and you know that I'm not saying I don't forget things, but I get to a certain point, and I was checking in with the mentor at the end of the day, and I was saying, "Oh, well, this happened and that happened," and in that conversation, the mentor said, "Well, you don't need to be a somebody who and that seemed really important to let go of trying to be a somebody who
that it could just be here, just doing what's next.
That's right.
Now, actually.
Well, whatever I'm being called to do, to just do that. But in dropping that, I mean, it's a great relief to be able to let go of that. That was a huge relief. Yeah. But also then the awareness expanding out to the community, and then actually taking in everything that everybody else is doing for me, actually, that I'm really being supported in every moment, in all these myriad different ways. Yeah, it was really good to let go of that, just receive the support the care that is there in this immediate community, but also, you know, expanding out beyond that.
Yeah. And very similar, isn't it, to what we were just looking at with Cameron, in the sense that so everything that's being done here is supporting you and supporting all, right? So everything that Colin's doing and everything that I'm doing, it's all supporting all of it. We're all being supported in that.
Yeah, so when the retreat was on, you know, there's all that fabulous spread of food goes out, and I was sort of saying, oh, isn't it great what other people have done doing all that food? And then
what happened during
I sort of overlooked different thing, because it's not somebody, it's not me who's doing it, but I'm part of it, I'm participating and contributing to it, and it. It's not a me who's making it happen. It's a life process. So it's a very, very different way to be participating. It feels very, very sort of safe and supportive place to just be, just be Colin, really.
Well, that really connects up, it feels like, with what we've been looking at some on the morning radio shows recently, that place of safety. When do I feel safe? When do I not feel safe? And it sounds like what you're just pointing at is what really makes me feel safe is when I'm not an I who's going to walk around doing all of this, but just being here in presence.
That's right. And just seeing these sort of layers of self-hatred sort of being peeled away, but there's like another one underneath and another one. Those conversations with the mentor, as one gets peeled away, the mentor comes back with something, you know, very loving, and it seems to reveal another one. But to just being present, really, a deeper and deeper sort of level, but primarily present to myself, really, the gift I've been given to receiving that gift.
So in what you're describing, you know, so those layers of self-hate that are there, you know, we don't have to hate them or not, you know, feel like there's something wrong, or because you're describing each one with that level of love and kindness and care that can be brought to the person, to Colin, gets deeper and deeper and deeper as all of that's revealed.
That's right. And then start to project that. Well, yeah, to see that around me, but noticing these little acts of kindness how I'm being supported and assisted seeing that. So not needing to be a somebody, and it's a sort of like I don't know place. So I'm not trying to be that. Mm-hmm. I'm just whatever life's calling me to do. Really.
Thank you. I've got a couple of minutes.
I was just, when you mentioned the exercise about safety that we just had in the year-long retreat, I was doing that one last night, and it was like describe or draw the place where you feel safe. And what dropped in was actually an experience of feeling the safest when like the heart is leading, mm-hmm. when everything is completely mm-hmm. open and there's some like, you know, expressing appreciation and gratitude as well and like that. And mm-hmm. that's the experience.
That's the experience.
Safest. Yeah.
When the heart is leading.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Which is completely the opposite of what we've been trained
yep.
to believe.
Yeah, I gotta board down and protect and
Yeah. And the experience that's dropping in with that, it's like we were talking about earlier, when, you know, retreatants are around and there's just that like upwelling of you wanna just hang off, you know. Yeah. You go and I remember I sometimes got to be in that role of handing people back their phones and things, you know, as they were heading off at the end of a retreat, and just making that gassho with all of that that love and that go happy, and you take care of that human, and you know, and it's like that. I think for about 6 months now, I've been doing a love letter every night, recording mm-hmm. it at night and then listening to it in the morning, and that's been a place where I've got to receive that.
Yes.
So where what comes through is, you know, all of that feeling, you know how it, what it's like mm-hmm. when you're making gassho to a retreatant, that's mm-hmm. what like the unconditional is doing to you, like mm-hmm. go happy and you take care of that human, and can you see what an amazing thing that you're doing like that?
It's like
that unconditional sees the experience that is there in that moment and says, look, this is...
Yeah, it's mirroring it back for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, making that gassho and...
Yeah, it's so good, isn't it? Because that's what I was looking at, too, when you said that, you know, for all of us, that's one of the great gifts, I project, of being on retreat, mm-hmm. is it brings mm-hmm. that freshness to it and those eyes.
Yes.
And there's a way in which... you know, it's that place where we sometimes talk about the extraordinary has become ordinary, mm-hmm. right? So we make deep gassho to these retreatants who are going off, and it's like, turn to fellow residents, deep gassho, you're staying here.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Is that the ordinary that, you know, is really extraordinary.
Yeah, I go around like that all the time. I thank you for doing what you're doing. You know that it's all of us doing what we're doing that makes it possible for us to do it.
And getting to have that the mentoring presence, you know, that gassho that you want to send mm-hmm. people on with, mm-hmm. that's there. Mm-hmm. You know, this person, Anna, wow, you know, looking at everything she used to like every day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And just that training of doing that love letter every day, it's like not a day ends where I don't experience that being profoundly taken care of, everything's unfolding perfectly and completely, you know, you're completely fine. It's like making that movement, doing that training bit. It's like, you know, how you sometimes say, like, not going to bed on an argument. It's like not a day ends where I don't experience that place.
Yeah.
I know how completely taken care of I am, whatever's going on.
And you know what I project is, what's so amazing about that is that it's not that we don't encounter every situation, like one night I don't really feel like it, in quotes, right? Or I'm too tired, or well, I've said it already, or you know, whatever it is for you. But we do it anyway.
Yeah.
And that's what's so extraordinary. You know, it's great on the nights where, oh, my heart's wide open and it's done, you know, all the things are there. But there's a way in which that transformation of doing it in the times where it's not right there, that's what shows us.
Yeah. Well, that's what builds the trust, when you do it in the times when everything feels awful, or you feel identified with what you're being told you are, that what it shows me in that direct experience way is that unconditional is always there and always available, and is that container for all of it.
Yes.
And so,
available for all of it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.